City Talk 105.9, this is the home of great music and great conversation, and this is Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor, the show which asks you to imagine that your house is on fire, but in a nice way. Could such a thing be possible? Well, I suppose so, because you get out yourself, you get your family out, you get your pets out, and on the way, you even have time to grab five pieces of precious vinyl, five songs that mean something to you. Also, you get to grab a book that means something, maybe a film or a TV series, a photograph as well, and an item of sentimental value. And in the hot seat today, pun very much intended, is TV mogul. Can I call you that, Phil Redmond?
You can call me anything as long as it's polite.
Are you still a TV mogul? Do you still consider yourself in the game, or are you kind of semi-retired now?
I'm sort of still in the game, but on the periphery, really. I suppose I'm more of a TV commentator than an actual petitioner at the moment.
Do you miss it?
I miss the ability of having the big shows like Brookie and Hollyoaks, Grange Hill to actually get ideas up on the screen and get people debating issues. You know? What I don't miss is all the kind of like nonsense and all the regulatory issues and things like that, and having to worry about the car parks and canteens for 1,000 people.
Because you started that issue-led idea of TV with Brookside, and now it almost seems that a soap opera isn't a soap opera unless it's got a telephone number at the end saying, if you're affected by any of these issues, please call this. Do you feel guilty for spawning that particular trend?
No, I don't, actually. What I feel sad about is that actually I think a lot of that now is more or less a kind of myth of history. I think people are kind of thinking that's the way it is, but actually, in fact, if you look at the reality, I don't think television is anymore anywhere near as challenging or as courageous as it was 10 years ago. I think people have, instead of they think about television dumbing down, I think if you look across what's been going on in the soaps and drama, I think that's probably one area where I would say it probably has. I'd argue about it dumbing down in other areas, but I think in that area, and I think that's because people have got frightened, you know.
Well, I tell you what, I'm particularly looking forward to finding out which film or TV series you would rescue from the flames. But before we do that, Phil Redmond, we must take the first record that you are going to grab as you flee your metaphorically burning home. And it's Roll Me Away by Bob Seger. Why have you gone for this one?
Oh, this goes way back to when I was just a sort of scribe, sort of trying to go around London telling everybody how marvellous I was and they should commission me. I remember driving in London in one of those really hot summers and stuck in London traffic, and I was late for a meeting, and it was before mobile phones, and in that tension of like, oh my God, you know, do I stop? Do I find a phone box? Do I keep going? A very, very frustration. And then on the radio came this track from Bob Seger, which just as the name says, Roll Me Away, and it just seemed so appropriate. So it kind of always stuck with me, and it's the kind of it mellows you down when you get into the kind of stress.
I love Hollywood Nights as well. I mean, we used to use that on a show that I produced when it was the Duncan Bark Show. Big fans of that. And also I know that our late colleague Phil Easton, that was his favourite driving song as well. Bob Seger's got a lot of driving songs to
Oh, absolutely.
Recommend.
You know, and it's you've just mentioned the late, great Phil there. And I mean, it's people of a certain age too who grew up with that, you know, through that kind of 60s, 70s rock type phase. We always had those fantastic drive songs.
Well, I tell you what, if you are driving now, as you're listening to City Talk 105.9, the home of great music and great conversation, turn it up. Wind your windows down and make like Phil Redmond and enjoy a bit of Bob Seger, Roll Me Away. Bob Seger and Roll Me Away. This is City Talk 105.9. It's Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor, the show which for 1 hour a day asks you to sit back, relax and imagine which five songs plus some other stuff you would rescue from your house if, well, let's hope it doesn't happen, but if it did, set on fire. And the person who's imagining that today is Phil Redmond. I'm going to call him a TV mogul because it's kind of journalistic shorthand. Brookside creator, Hollyoaks creator, Grange Hill creator, my favourite. I've got to say, actually, Phil, people talk about Brookside a lot, and it was great. For me, I'm not just saying this to butter you up or to creep. My childhood would have been so much poorer without Grange Hill. I used to walk home on the days when Blue Peter was on, feeling depressed and kind of thinking, oh, God, I've got to watch someone make something cool.
Out of toilet rolls.
Yeah, or do something worthy or talk about stamp collecting.
Yeah.
And then on, I think it was Tuesday and Friday.
It was
Grange Hill. Mm. And genuinely, I would walk home in a better mood. There was one day when I'd kind of walk home in a neutral mood when they'd put Go For It or something like that on.
Yeah.
Do you still get people, kids or adults now, coming up to you and talking about Grange Hill?
I do, and came across this amazing statistic out of the BBC, who are great at finding these things, but something like 82% of everybody in the UK has watched Grange Hill. You know? And it's quite humbling, actually, in a way, you know, when you think about it, that sat in Rodney Street on an ironing board writing the first script, you know.
Is that right, an ironing board?
An ironing board, yeah, because I couldn't afford a table. But, and then you think about what kind of, it was 30 years, so it was a big impact, you know, in that sense. But that's what I was kind of referring to earlier, really. You know, you look across and try and find a programme that's on the, across the TV landscape now that did what Grange Hill did. It's just very difficult to find. And I think rites of passage is very important for, you know, for young people, and to have sort of cultural touchstones. And it wasn't that Grange Hill had all the answers or whatever, but what it did is actually throw up issues and say, look, you're not the only one, you know, so you're not the only one being bullied, or you're not the only one who can't get the girl, or you're not the only one who's got a boil on your nose because it's your first date.
Well, this might say more about me than about Grange Hill, but I think I remember more incidents from Grange Hill than I do from my own child in the early days. Things like, and not just the obvious. I know everyone talks about, you know, Zamo being caught chasing a dragon in the back of the shop and all that kind of stuff. I'm talking about when Imelda the bully used to go and rub asbestos down people's backs, and Gripper, who would bully the younger Asian guy who was in the same year as him, and Mr. Bronson in his wig. I mean, stuff that has really stuck in my mind more than my own school.
Well, you know, that's what I mean about being cultural touchstones, because I think probably what it does is help you contextualize what's going on either to you or around you. And that's why it stays in your mind. And it's like music. This is why we always keep coming back to music, and like this type of program where you can sort of pick five pieces of music that have big impacts, not actually because of the piece of music, but also because it's a time, a moment in your life that piece of piece of music actually epitomizes. And that is the strength of culture, my boy.
Does it make you smile? Because I think back as well, I'd like to say, oh, you know, I grew up on the mean streets. I didn't. I grew up in a kind of normal, I guess what you'd call middle class background. And I knew kids who weren't allowed to watch Grange Hill because it was kind of considered a bad influence on them. That must give you a swell of pride inside.
Well, it's interesting. When I used to do all the research at Grange Hill, you'd know exactly what type of school you were walking into, but how difficult it was to get access, because it split very much into schools. It would say, fantastic, brilliant, kids relate to it, we can use it as a teaching tool. To others who'd say, no, we don't really like that kind of thing here, you know. But I mean, one of the great things I remember being at some event somewhere, and the head boy from Eton came up and said it was the favourite programme in the school, you know.
Yeah.
And it was because it wasn't particularly about school. It was about the bits on the way to and from and in the lessons. And they were common to no matter what institution you were in.
Absolutely right. You get to save a film or a TV series. I guess with your background, you are going to choose a TV series as you flee your burning home, Phil. What have you gone for?
I'd gone for the DVD box set of the original Survivors program, Terry Nation created back in the 60s, 70s, because it was just so apocalyptic. And the idea about our very civilized society, what would happen if we lost everything, like electricity and all that kind of thing. And I think it was just a fantastic program at the time, made people really think about what it is to be a community and what it is to work together and things. And then they only did two series and it stopped. And for 30 years, I was kind of waiting, you know, for it to be remade. And I even actually suggested to BBC a couple of times that I would remake it or something similar, but it was like, nah. So when they said they announced they were making it, I was really looking forward to it. But it was one of those fantastic disappointments in life. You know?
This was one, was it last autumn?
Last autumn. You know, and they spent a lot of money on it, you know, but the PC gang had just got hold of it. And it's just daft things like this killer plague that had gone through and wiping out the planet had made, had somehow or other managed to allow a politically correct ethnic mix of cast to survive.
It was classic boxing. You know, you've got the black man, you've got the strong white woman, you've got the young Asian boy, you've got the kind of spoilt Middle Eastern playboy.
That's right. And then the other thing about it, you know, it was all that. But then they also, when they started sort of resorting to weapons to defend themselves, as you would, they, of course, only had the legally permissible two-barrel shotgun.
Yeah.
And you just think, well, they only have to go down some of the areas in the city here or Moss Side or into, like, Brixton in London and then get themselves a couple of Uzis and things, you know.
Yeah, surely.
And all that was just, and that's what I mean about it. That's where television's lost their way. Instead of it sort of like throwing up this big issue about, you know, well, what would happen if society did break down? Well, how primitive or how animalistic would we revert to, you know. Instead of that, having that as a great challenge, you know, and then sort of from that thinking about, well, actually, you know, what have we actually got in society now that we can build on, you know. They just went down this really stupid, you know, let's remake this TV series because it was successful in the past and we'll make it again, you know. And I was just so disappointed in it. And the final thing that really wound me up was the fact that, of course, it all had to be some big government conspiracy somewhere, you know. And it's like, what was wrong with the original idea that some guy dropped a vial in a chemistry lab, you know, and it was just a, you know, something that ran through the world and killed us all. You know, what's wrong with that? You know?
Well, they say that cockroaches would survive a nuclear holocaust. It seems like politically correct attitudes and conspiracy theories would survive a plague on this great country. So there we go. That's your choice. The original series of The Survivors, not the remake from last year. Phil Redmond is taking us through his choices, what he would say from his burning house, because that's what we do on Take 5 on City Talk 105.9. Your next song, Phil, is Betty Davis Eyes by Kim Carnes. Why have you gone for this?
Well, again, you'll probably find there's a theme running through this, and it is my days as a TV mogul. And Betty Davis Eyes was a record that sort of like I fastened onto when I started to write Brookie. And it almost became each of my series always tend to have a subliminal theme tune, which I've worked to, and on this one it was Bette Davis Eyes, Kim Carnes. I even at one stage had it on my answer phone, you know,
as the theme for Brookside.
Yeah, you know, just to my own as a creator, this kind of thing. But sometimes when you're writing, you get to a point when you need something to kick you off into a new direction, everything, and it's comfort blankets, you know. And so this I can't remember which album this came off with Kim Carnes. But Betty Davis Eyes was just a track of the time, the early 80s. And I had it on a lot, and I had it on my answer phone, I had it in my car, and I had it in my office at Brookside. And late at night, the security guys just got absolutely fed up listening to this track.
Nearly as fed up as in years to come they may have been of hearing the old da 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 da.
That was a great temptation not to grab that one, but you know, yeah. But I can memorise that one.
City Talk 105.9, that was Betty Davis Eyes by Kim Carnes. That was the second choice of TV mogul, brackets retired, close brackets, Phil Redmond on Take 5. He's choosing five of his records and some of the stuff that he would save from his theoretically burning home. Coming up, we're going to hear which book, photograph and personal item Mr. Redmond would save, plus some more of his precious vinyl, including the Beach Boys and a bit of Bunny Mint as well. This is City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9, this is the home of great music and great conversation, and this is Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor, and my studio guest, Phil Redmond, creator of Grange Hill. I'm going to stick with that for a while because that was my favourite one, of the holy triumvirate of Grange Hill, Brookside and Hollyoaks. Going to play some more music soon, which Phil has chosen to rescue from the flames of his metaphorically burning house. But first of all, Phil, I want to ask you about a photograph you might grab from the wall as you flee the inferno.
Well, I'm working on the assumption that we are fleeing from the inferno. Lex would have got out with all the kind of family photos.
Yeah.
And the one I would grab would be, I've got a fantastic photograph of myself in a swimming bath when I made my directorial debut shooting a series called What Now? And it was during the break in a shoot, and it was about scallies chasing each other around a swimming bath. And in the break in the shoot when we were having coffee, I flopped down to look at the script, my cup of coffee, and I was just drinking away. And later on, they brought in the production stills, you know, they follow around, like, and they got me sitting right next to this great big sign which said, learners only, which was like the paddling pool.
And you felt it was apt?
I thought it was very apt, you know, and also I knew exactly what the crew were thinking too. So I had it blown up, and again, it was another one that stayed on my wall.
Have you got in the office or at home?
It's at home at the moment, you know, and but I like things like that because they're kind of like these sort of serendipitous moments, and then it brings you down to earth. The time happen, these things are to remind you, you know, that you at one stage, you know, had to learn to do what other people were doing. You know?
I think that's what press photographers spend their whole time doing when they're chasing celebrities down the street, maybe, but when Gordon Brown's giving a speech or something like that, they're just desperately waiting for him to come into an angle an apt sign exactly like Learners Only, which would be a good one for him as well, certainly at the moment. I shouldn't mention Gordon Brown too much. He might be gone by the time this show's aired, but you know what I mean. Right, so that's your photograph. You've chosen to save yourself, which is nice. And nice to see a little bit of ego creeping in in, but as you've said, the family photographs have been saved potentially by others.
TV mogul, you know, megalomania comes with the turf.
You've got to have a bit of. Do you have to have ego? Would you consider yourself to have an ego?
Yes. I mean, one of the mantras of Mayor's Television. Well, the mantra. Well, there was two mantras of Mayor's Television. One was, no one's ego is bigger than mine. Live with it. And the second one was, standing order number one is no until further notice.
And do you
was
still
never
have it?
Standing order number two.
Do you still have it now? The ego.
I do, and it comes down to creative things and creative writing, producing. When I'm actually involved in the creative process, I have to remind everybody that I'm now going to become creative. And even in the company, I mean, people would come up to me and say, who are you today? Which hat are you wearing? You know, because they knew if I was the writer, I'd be a little bit more difficult to deal with than if I was the producer, and I'd be a little bit more difficult to deal with if I was the executive producer.
Is there, you're artistic or creative. Is there an expectation on artistic and creative people in this country to be struggling? You're almost cast aside if you are successful like you are, and you produce something commercially successful.
Yeah, I was once described as Britain's first hyphenate, you know, and I think I probably might have remained the only hyphenate. And what that meant was that in America, the writer-producer is a standard, you know, sort of animal within the industry, really. But in Britain, it's very, very rare, you know, and people are very, they find it difficult coping with someone who can actually, one time, can be extremely creative, temperamental, egotistical, all that sort of stuff. But on the other hand, can then suddenly switch into being very pragmatic and practical and finance orientated, you know. So, and I just think we need to develop more of it, you know, because that's where, again, that's where the best stuff from America comes from. Because a lot of the shows like Sopranos and West Wing and things like that are driven by, like Sorkin, who created West Wing, you know. They're all David Simon, who did The Wire. You know, they're all driven by the people who create them, because that's where the passion and that's where the, you know, the interest and the control comes from. In the end.
Don't get me started on The Wire or The West Wing, because this show only lasts an hour, and I'll end up talking for another. We'll have to eat into Drive with Peter McDowell. Let's talk about your next song instead. You've chosen Echo and the Bunnymen, local band, Nothing Lasts Forever. Why have you gone for this one, Phil?
Well, there's two tracks that epitomise capital culture. One was The Farms, Altogether Now, and which we might come to, and Echo and the Bunnymen, Nothing Lasts Forever, because it was almost a track that I'd kind of heard, but it didn't have the same kind of resonances until we included it in the opening of the arena. And it's just, the lyrics, I think, are just brilliant, you know, and it's about, I mean, it's McCulloch being a poet. But at the same time, it sort of lasts, it sort of like really resonates for people about, you know, it's not just about not last forever, it's not depressive, it's about I want it now, you know, I want it now, and don't tell me my ship is coming in, you know. And I mean, that really epitomises Scousers, isn't it, you know, which is basically, why can't we do it now, why can't we get it now? So I just think that, and so I just think there's another one of those tracks that's come late in my sort of catalogue, but is now up there in the top five, because it's a great symbol, you know.
Well, cast your mind back. It's January 2008. Mm-hmm. It's the opening night of the arena, the official kickstart. Echo and the Bunnymen and Nothing Lasts Forever on City Talk 105.9. The third choice of my studio guest for this hour on Take 5, who is Phil Redmond. I'm Will Batchelor, and we're going through Phil's choices for which records and some other stuff he would grab from his house if it was ever to set alight. That's what we do on this show between 2 and 3 on City Talk. And Phil, let's go to a book now. You get to rescue one book from the flames. And you're a creative man. You love words. You're a wordsmith. I can't believe which book you've gone for. Do you want to confess all?
Well, the problem is, someone says, what's your favourite book? It's impossible, you know, because well, I could give you a long list of books, which I kind of like revisit every now and then. But what I went for, makes me sound ridiculous now, isn't it? It's a bit nerdy, you know, but it's the kind of XP manual, you know.
You've saved a computer manual. You've not saved Shakespeare or Molière or anything like that. You're saving a computer manual.
I've saved a computer manual because XP is probably the most stable platform that Microsoft turned out, apart from the new one, which we don't really know about yet. And I spend a lot of time fiddling with my computers, and because they're old, and I'm a nerd, and I like keeping them going, so I'm always trying to find a new thing. But also underneath it all, of course, is the fact that when I get out of this burning house, there's going to be somewhere else which is going to have a computer, and if I've got my XP manual, I can get it going, and there I can access all the works of Shakespeare, every other book you want to, through Google. So,
do you know what?
It seems like an obvious choice to me.
That seems like a very cynical approach to this show, but we'll let you, because there's no rules that say you can't save a computer manual. So there you go, the book that our wordsmith Phil Redmond is saving. I'm just going to get this on the record, is Secrets of XP, a computer manual. Phil, that's very practical. We've got some more music coming up on Take 5 on City Talk 105.9, including the Beach Boys, and he teased us with it earlier. How about one by The Farm as well? This is City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9, this is the home of great music and great conversation, and this is Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor, the show which asks you to imagine what you would do if your house is on fire. Yeah, I know, you'd get their wife out and the kids out, and maybe you'd grab the pet as well, but after that, you get to run back in and you get to grab a pile of steaming hot vinyl. You get 5 records you get to grab from your collection on the way out. You also get to grab a book, a film, a photograph, and an object as well. And the person who is putting himself in this quandary today is Phil Redmond. We're calling him a TV mogul, brackets retired, close brackets. And Phil, your next track is from, it's actually from a film which I'm quite embarrassed to admit that I like, but it's The Beach Boys, and it's Kokomo, isn't it? That's how you pronounce it. Yeah. Why have you gone for this? And do you know, a bit of trivia, do you know which film it's from?
Actually, I don't. I did, but I've forgotten. But that's not the important thing for me, because this is my wedding song. And when Lex and I got married, this was the track that was out and around and so was played at the reception, and we kind of danced to all night. And I would grab it, not just because of that, but because, you know, Mal Young, who was producing Brookie at the time and everything, had a vinyl disc made into a clock for us, you know. And so that is actually the record of Kokomo that I would grab if we left, you know. Bearing in mind, with my XP manual under my arm, all my collection will be on MP3 anyway.
Oh, no, that is definitely cheating. We shall strike that comment from the record, because in this world, iPods don't exist. but yeah, so you get to grab that. We'll tell you what, we'll grab the real one as opposed to the clock version. It was actually in the film Cocktail with Tom Cruise.
That's
Are you a fan of that?
Yeah. No, not really. I mean, I heard the track, didn't even know the connection and everything, and it was just a brilliant track. And I was always a big Beach Boy fan. And when the Beach Boys were out, and it was all that Beatles, Beach Boys, Rolling Stones thing, you know, I collected both Beatles and the Beach Boys. And of course, Kokomo, of course, was almost like a sort of a comeback record for the Beach Boys. And suddenly, wow, the Beach Boys are back, and all that. So,
what year was it that A, you got married, and B, this was kind of doing the rounds?
1990.
So it was released. Was it re-released then? Presumably,
because probably came out in 1989. But yeah, you know, that's when we fastened on to it.
There we go. Beach Boys and Kokomo. Let's have a blast of it, shall we? And take Phil Redmond back to his wedding day. I'm not going to dance with you, Phil, if you don't mind. You can just imagine that while we play this. City Talk 105.9, the home of great music and great conversation. That was Kokomo by the Beach Boys. That was the 4th choice of TV mogul, brackets retired, close brackets, Phil Redmond, who is choosing 5 records from his metaphorically burning home, because that is what we do here on Take 5. That's why it's called Take 5. Come on, you must have cottoned onto that by now. You also get to grab some other stuff as well. Phil has saved a book, The Secrets of XP Computer Manual. He saved a TV series, the original version of the survivors, and he's chosen a photograph as well that you can save of him on his directorial debut next to a big sign that said learners only, because he was in a swimming pool. So we shall find out what his final song is in a few moments' time. But first of all, Phil, you also get to save one item, if you like, one thing of sentimental value, one precious object. What are you going for?
I am going for my old Sony Ericsson 910 iPhone.
That sounds old.
Well, it is old. It's probably about 10 years old now. It was one of the very first PDAs that came out. I mean, they had the 800 and the 900 and then the 910. But it's also, it sounds daft, but it's built like a Hummer. And I've dropped it, I've thrown it, I've lost it. It's been underwater, but the thing just
in anger
keeps going.
Or in absent-mindedness.
It's just, you know, life of action, man, that kind of thing. But no, it just keeps going and going and going. And every now and then I kind of think, oh, I'll get myself a new one. So I do get myself a new one. And I've been through them all, the N95 and all that sort of stuff. And I carry an iPhone now and things. But every now and then they all crash. And I am able to go and get my 910 off the shelf, put the SIM card in, and off we go again, you know. And I also got it because, sentimental in a sense, because It was also when we started going digital over at Mersey, and we did some great work early on at getting TV programs onto mobile phones. Mm. And we actually did work with some people to put an episode of Hollyoaks onto a Sony memory chip, which slots into the 910 phone. You know? And so it was like lots of kind of like, when I picked this thing up, it reminds me of time, it reminds me of people, it reminds me of things that we were trying to do and everything. And it's just a nice, clunky, sort of tactile feel to it. Mm.
I never knew.
My kids think it's horrendous. They always sort of disown me when they see me with it.
Well, I knew about your, obviously, creative achievements. I never realised that you're a technological nerd. You called yourself a nerd, so I'm going to call you a nerd as well.
Okay.
Is that kind of just
geek.
Is that a side passion? Because it sounds like you've tried to marry the two of your passions.
No, not really, because I was at a talk earlier today about being digital, and I said that's where I come from, because in 1981, 82, Brookie was one of the first digital events in the world, because the technology we were using then was the first time that broadcast had been going into digital with the Sony 3000 editor, and I spent a lot of time in the Sony High Technology Lab in Palo Alto. Actually sitting in a canteen with their software engineers, with these huge reams of paper that used to go into the old computers, you know, the big mainframe computers. And they were talking to me over lunch about what I was trying to do with the drama, and then they'd be rewriting the code there and then in front of me on the table. And brilliant memories. And the whole point of Brookie and Hollyoaks and then Grange Hill later was about the way it was all driven by digital technology underneath it. And, you know, we did some fantastic stuff. And it became, Mersey was one of the world's great centres of excellence. People from all over the world came to see how we did it. And even Hollyoaks was the first widescreen, high-definition 16x9 shoot in the world in drama. And we were the first to go hard disk before RAID was invented. And people into computers know about RAID. It's about how you manage multiple hard disks.
I thought it was fly spray.
No, I'm sorry, mate. But it's like, and we had 64 hard drives. It was so complicated that we had an optical link back to the manufacturer's mainframe. And our server used to talk to their server, and we'd get a phone call or something. You know, our server's been talking to your server, and your server's not feeling well, so someone's coming up to fix it. You know, so I've always been into technology, and by understanding technology, you can find new ways to do things.
We spoke earlier about how there's a feeling perhaps in the creative and artistic world that you're not allowed to be commercially successful. There's also, I think, a feeling that you're not meant to understand technology. You're meant to be otherworldly and artistic and poetic, you know, like a lakes poet or something. And again, that's clearly not a view you subscribe to. You mentioned Channel 4 there in the early days. There was a certain amount of bitterness and rancour, wasn't there, when they decommissioned Brookside, which you talk about with such fondness, and you named the baddie in Brookside. It was Jack Michelson, wasn't it, which was a fairly thinly veiled spoonerism, I suppose you might say, on Michael Jackson. Was he the commissioning editor of...
Well, Michael Jackson was the chief executive of Channel 4. But that was really me being... That was me letting the writers have their head, because it was the writers who wanted to sort of settle all the old scores through the scripts, you know. So, why not?
Well, Channel 4 is struggling a little bit financially now. Do you take any pleasure, any sort of joy in that? Sort of thinking, there you go, like when a girl dumps you and you see her struggling in later years. Do you take any sang-froid in that?
No, not really, because I think there's a bigger debate. I mean, the fact that they keep going around saying they're under 50 million shorts is rubbish. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, what they're actually saying is that give us 150 million quid so we can carry on with the same lifestyle. That means we all earn 1 million quid and get 2 million in our pension fund for doing public service broadcasting. You know, and if you want to do that, you go to ITV. And I think that's the bigger debate. It's basically, look, mate, you've lost 150 million. Now, how are you going to cope? And the way you cope is to look at new technology. You know, I mean, I'm astonished the way the cost of production have not come down in the way they should have done because of technology, you know. And sitting in this studio, you guys will know that that's actually happened in radio. It's still to happen in television. Mm.
We shall see. You got one more song, Phil, that you get to choose as you flee the inferno. And you've gone for... you're from Cantrell Farm, aren't you?
I'm just next door in Heighton, but...
near enough.
Well, Brookie was right next to Cantrell Farm, yeah.
And you've gone for a song by the farm, so local connection, why have you gone for All Together Now by the farm?
Well, because, I mean, the farm were actually in Brookie in the early days, as sort of like guest celebrities, because they were big back then, and we did have one of the things where the kids go to see the farm. And their track, All Together Now, I've always... Again, it's a fantastic track, because it is about, you know, all together now. All coming together. But the subline is in no man's land. And again, it's the resonance for Scousers, because if you come from the city, you understand those two things, which is basically we do all pull together, you know, but at the same time, we all feel as though we're in no man's land, we're on our own, and that's why we pull together. And that's why I used it as the unofficial theme of Capital Culture, because when we had the great furore, and I pulled them all together and called it the Great Scouse Wedding,
yeah,
you know, and I played all together now at the press conference, and it sort of set the scene and took us all right the way through the year, and right to the very end when I talked Roger McGough into writing his lines about it, about All Together Now in No Man's Land. And we mixed the two things, his poem and the track in the transition event, you know. So that's, again, well, why I think.
I'm glad you mentioned that that soundbite, which was widely reported at the time, the old It's Been Like a Scouse Wedding, you know, we've not been getting on, but it's all going to turn out okay on the night.
Yeah.
Did that pander to an extent, do you think, to the southern media's perception of what Liverpool is? Oh, you know, they're always fighting and stuff. Was it an own goal, or did you think just think it was a great soundbite?
It wasn't an own goal. It was a kind of a breakaway. You know, hitting them on the breakaway. You know, because I mean, I constantly keep saying to people, like, don't listen to them and don't take the lip. You know, and then, you know, they're constantly coming up and saying, oh, you're not this, you're not that, and the answer is, no, we're not. We're Scousers, this is what we do, you know, and we're proud of it. And the fact is that this city is the one that's always prepared to open and say, well, it might not be fashionable, but actually, here's the truth, you know. And that's what it's about, you know. And that's what weddings are about, when you bring the family together, uncle and auntie who haven't seen each other and everything, can actually tell home truths to each other that nobody else can. They can have a fight, but at the end of the night, everybody gets together and they have a fantastic time.
Well, I tell you what, Phil Redmond, pull your tin hat on, duck that sausage roll, because we're going to have a blast of it now. This is The Farm, All Together Now, on City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9, the home of great music and great conversation. This has been Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor, and my studio guest, Phil Redmond, who is dusting down the remnants of the buffet from his sharp suit as we speak. Phil, thank you for coming in. Are you happy with your choices now we've heard them all and spoken them through?
Well, I do, yeah. You know, I think it's great. And the theme, of course, is that remember that nothing lasts forever, you know. But if we pull all together now, you can roll me away.
Do you know what? That's the longest sequence of puns I've ever heard. And I tell you what, it just goes to prove your credentials as a wordsmith, and we'll forgive you for choosing A Computer Manual as the book you would rescue from the flames. Phil Redmond, media mogul, TV mogul, open brackets, retired, close brackets. Thanks for joining us on Take 5 on City Talk 105.9, the home of great music and great conversation.